think that God chose America as his divine messianic force to be a sort of policeman of the whole world. God has a way of standing before the nations with judgment, and it seems that I can hear God saying to America, you are too arrogant. If you don't change your ways, I will rise up and break the backbone of your power, and I'll place it in the hands of a nation that doesn't even know my name. Be still and know that I'm God. The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home. Though the civil rights leaders, for various reasons, refuse or can't take a stand or have to go along with the administration, that's their business. But I'm afraid that I know that justice is indivisible. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talking about righteousness. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Our call-in number is 1-800-893-9562. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, we would have a tribute to Lynn Manning, who just passed recently. He was artistic director of the Watts Village Theater. And also, once again, we had an outstanding cast from A Blessing Before Dying here in the studio with us.
How you doing?
They're going to talk about the opening last week and all of that. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you for having us back, Melvin.
Okay, let's start from the top. Let's go around, introduce yourself, and then we get into the discussion.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say thanks, Melvin, for having us back. This is Court King, the director of A Lesson Before Dying, also starring as the character Grant Wiggins.
Cooper Steve Anderson. I play the bigoted evil Sheriff Sam Guidry.
There he is.
Next.
Yeah, I love it. This is Shahid Chappelle, and I'm playing Jefferson. And I'm also the director, co-directing with Court King, A Lesson Before Dying. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, now, before we get into a discussion of your excellent open that we had last week, we lost a real important historic figure, Lynn Manning, artistic director of the Watts Village Theater, award-winning. Just going to read a little about him, and then later on we're going to get into the discussion. I think Lorinda was just in the last production that he performed a couple months
ago.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Was that North on South Central?
It was the Crip Hop.
Crip Hop.
Yeah,
Crip Hop. That's right.
Yeah. Wow.
Lorraine Dawkins.
Yeah.
And the other one, too. North on South.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Lynn Manning overcame blindness from a ballroom bullet to forge a 30-year career as a champion athlete, poet, actor, theater company founder, and especially a playwright inspired by his own hardest experience in the social problems of South Los Angeles. Manning's signature work was Waits, an autobiographical one-man play about his rough childhood in Los Angeles and his becoming blind in a 1978 ballroom shooting in Hollywood. His work was developed by the Mark Tabor Forum and premiered in 2000 as part of the Mark Tabor, two series of small theater productions with Manning performing the show himself. Manning began winning recognition in local poetry circles in the mid-1980s. And in the early 90s, he was writing and performing a one-man theater piece. He and actor Quinn Drew founded the Watts Village Theater Company in 1996. With Drew as artistic director and Manning as founding board chairman and resident playwright. The company will open a restaging of Riots/Rebellions on Friday, August 14th at the Manfundi Institute Auditorium and Watts Labor Action Committee.
Okay. Now, throughout the broadcast, every now and then, we're going to project a picture of Lynn. I had Lynn in the studio last August, 2014, and we talked about theater, talked about some of the type of plays that you're doing right now and what it takes to be successful with that. And so with that, let's get into some observation about the opening and weekend. What are your thoughts?
It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was
Jump
great.
Right in, anybody. Come on.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
First night we had a packed house.
Yes.
Full audience. We had standing ovations. And, well, we've had standing ovations every night we performed the
every
play.
Night.
Every yeah. night. Mm-hmm.
And we've also Thank had God. Applause throughout the play for different scenes, especially these two guys, Court and Shahid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's really great to hear the feedback we've been getting. You know, it's really a blessing mm-hmm. to hear the things that people are saying about our performances, how we've directed it, and also just the messages that people are getting, you know, how powerful it is. You know, people are being changed. People are crying in the audience. Mm-hmm. People are laughing, you know. So it's a show. It's a well-rounded show, and mm-hmm. we're very proud of it. So its opening weekend was very successful.
Mm-hmm. What was the biggest challenge?
I think the biggest challenge was, obviously, Court and I are two different people, but we directed it as one. And I think we've grown a lot as friends, as directors, and as artists, because it took a lot of, you know, communication and listening and a lot of lessons that I know that I've learned, and I'm pretty sure Court can attest. But it's just standing at one accord, letting the communication flow, and really just letting God have his way.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think losing our sound system one night was a pretty big challenge. We had to improv, running around, pick up parts.
Yeah, but it came through. It came together at the end. We got the sound. The producer ended up last minute going out and getting the equipment that was necessary to do the show. Mm-hmm. And the great thing that I want to take note of, the audience, they waited patiently. Yeah. And because some of them have heard about the production, you know, based on the prior performances, and so they really wanted to wait and see what we were going to give them. So mm-hmm. I think they were pleased.
Mm-hmm. And we gave them a great show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, and you know, I just come back from the National Black Theater Festival.
Right. I heard about that.
In Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Just so many plays down there, a lot of plays with big casts like mm-hmm. the one we had. Just a shout-out to the Aerobic Company, the Magnificent Dunbar Hotel. And this play that you're performing now would have been excellent. They had it in about 10 different locations, you know, et cetera, like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know what? Let's go into a scene, and then we'll come back and discuss it a little more.
Okay.
Yeah, what's the setting?
Are you gonna well, we're going to do a scene between Grant Wiggins and the sheriff. This is the first scene in the play where Grant Wiggins is coming to actually come into the storeroom to counsel Jefferson for the first time. And this is kind of...
For the people that don't know, let's set up the plot a little bit.
Okay, you want to do that, Cooper?
Yeah, Jefferson, innocent young black man, is convicted of murder. And his white lawyer called him a hog, and Jefferson took that to heart. He really took it to heart. And so in entrapment in the jail, he acts like a hog. He doesn't act like a human being.
Also, respect he lost, yeah.
And his godmother, his godmother enlists the local school teacher, Grant Wiggins, to try to help him die with dignity, die like a man. Yes. Therefore, a lesson before dying.
Mm-hmm. Yes, my character I'm playing is actually an atheist, and there's also a reverend. So there's this battle between the secular and the gospel and the spiritual. Mm-hmm. So this scene we're doing now is the beginning of the scene where I come in to counsel Jefferson for the first time.
I want to talk to you. Feet out, arms out. How you, my prisoner, get along?
This selects to be my first time alone with him, sir.
Where's his godmother?
Homesick, she says.
Is she or ain't she?
She says she's got a cold, but I think she just wants me and Jefferson alone together.
What's in there?
Same as before.
Picnics.
Yes, sir.
Get the bag. Hold it out there. The idea is you being a professor. You're supposed to make a man out of him?
Something like that, sir.
A man for what?
It was his godmother's idea for me to talk to him. She didn't really ask about what.
I'm asking you. What are you going to talk about?
I don't honestly know, sir. It was her idea. It wasn't mine.
That was not the question.
Then what was, Sheriff?
Make him a man for what?
To die with dignity, I suppose.
Some job.
Yes, sir.
But is it a good one? I mean, should it be done at all?
It's hard to say.
I don't like it, Professor. I've never been in college, but I learned a thing or two about life being the sheriff. I had to execute this boy, not torture him. I would rather watch a dumb hog die in that chair than an upset, out-of-his-mind, aggravated boy frying it. I don't think you'll make him understand nothing. How do you like that, Professor?
Well, I see your point.
Nobody heard from Jefferson's mother or the father?
No, sir.
Long gone, God knows where, never coming back, huh?
I suppose so.
Can't blame him, can you?
I'm not blaming anybody for anything.
How about you, Professor? Man smart as you? Why ain't you gone, too?
People paid my way to college so that I can come back and teach the children. So that's what I'm doing.
All your life? I said all your life?
Who knows, Sheriff?
I do. You people are the same. You'll be long gone, too. Scene. Thank you.
Okay, now how did you approach developing your character? Especially since they had like your role, you've seen somebody like Don Cheadle in it. Did you watch any of that? Or what kind of effect did that have on you?
The interesting thing about that is I kind of watched clips of it, but for my process, I didn't really want to watch the whole movie only because I didn't want to be impressed with a way to play or approach Grant Wiggins. You know, I wanted to have a clean slate, be completely free of any impressions of him. So, and that's how I kind of approached him, with the open mind, open heart, open spirit. And, you know, he just came to me, yeah.
And then how about you, Shahid? Because another famous actor was playing your role.
Right, it was Mekhi Phifer. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely followed his work, and he's an incredible actor. I'm kind of in simulation with Court. I saw clips of the movie. It was an HBO special. And I specifically did watch Mekhi Phifer to see how he portrayed Jefferson and also just the relationship with Grant and Jefferson just for acting knowledge and information on how another actor did it, not necessarily to mimic or imitate his performance. I would say that I made drastic choices for Mekhi Phifer. I think Mekhi Phifer did a great job. He's a great actor, great artist, but I definitely feel like I've taken Jefferson to a level for myself emotionally that I've not seen perform before, because like I said, this was a part of my research, watching the HBO special, reading the book, and reading the play, obviously, and also watching some clips from the off-Broadway production of it.
Mm-hmm. How about you? Because I know I watched the sheriff. I'm wondering about the costume. What kind of sheriff? In the movie, I thought the sheriff had on suits and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And same thing here?
Well, we did some research on the internet and looked at how sheriffs actually dressed in, at that time in 1948. And I only saw one or two in a suit. Most of them wore uniforms. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. We went out and got me a uniform. And as far as the character, I had an idea how to approach this character. And Shaheed in Court totally changed my thinking. And it was difficult for me. It took me a while to get a grasp on this fellow because he's a pretty awful person, and I'm not like that. So I had to find a way to be that way or find a way to project that. And I did when I discovered, okay, it's about power. He has to have the power.
Mm-hmm.
And the blacks are, as far as he's concerned, are not human. Mm-hmm. They're like animals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he wouldn't mistreat his dog, so he's not going to, doesn't want Jefferson mistreated. But he's still got to be the boss. And if he has to beat his dog to be the boss, he'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wanted to say as a director, and, you know, correlation with Court, I'm going to let you speak next, but
I think
that we've definitely, with the actors, we've trusted in God and their natural talents, yeah. But we have, as actors, with the background the Court has, with the background that I have, we've tried to bring that to the table and really guide these actors based on the information from the script on how these characters should be portrayed on the stage. And we're trying to really maximize that, the emotional, the psyche of Jefferson, of the sheriff, of Grant, of Vivian, of Miss Emma. We're really trying to be true to the emotional tone that the playwright has written in there, because this play is very intelligent. It's highly emotional, very dramatic, but it has its light moments. So there's a flow that all the characters have in connection towards each other. And Court and I really, really saw that as we read the script and wanted to bring that out as we directed it in the characters.
Mm-hmm. And they helped me see it because through their understanding and explanation, I saw this guy is really more harsh, more cruel than what I originally had thought.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about voices? The fact that you in an area like Louisiana, was 40s?
1948.
Yeah, during that time period. How did you find, that's like I'm anxious to see it. Did you play with voices? Did you seek for a character voice, especially the sheriff, you know, in terms of dialect and all of that kind of stuff?
Well, if you hear Cooper talk, he just naturally has like this
I'm from the
Southern Tannins voice.
Dialect.
So, so he was like the perfect guy for the role. And as far as Grant Wiggins, my character, He grew up in the South, so I assumed that he did have an accent growing up, but he did leave actually the South, and everything about the South he hates, he despises everything about it. So when he went to the North and got educated by white men, it's like I would assume that he just completely demolished any sort of accent, Southern accent, you know.
Right.
Disregarded all that. So for me, I kind of stayed away from the accents. I know some of our characters do have accents. I know Jefferson.
Yeah, I think with Jefferson, and exactly what Court's saying, a lot of what we did as directors is stay true to what was written.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think that's important because we did not write this story. So the more honest, the more believable we can be as actors, as artists, the more research, the more authenticity, if I said that correctly, we'll give to the playwright. But as far as Jefferson, I did in rehearsals explore with an accent. I'm native born in Los Angeles from Compton, California, and I've not traveled much. And as an actor, I've never taken any kind of dialect classes. So what I did to portray the believability of that tone and that sound was the script is very, very well written. Mm-hmm. And Jefferson is uneducated. I have an AA in liberal arts. I have my bachelor's degree in sociology, my master's degree in criminology. So I'm an educated man through the glory of God, first generation of my family to graduate from college. So it was difficult for me to really be illiterate. Mm-hmm. But I think the way it was written, it helps me go there. there's a lack of pronouncing some of vowels and
most of
different
his,
things like
most
that.
Most of his words are spelled wrong. In the
right. So it really helps a lot.
He's very greatly written.
Yeah.
So I got to give you a compliment. You've done an excellent job.
Yes, he's done a great job.
I thought you were listening to YouTube all day.
Oh, wow. Thanks for that. Appreciate that, Cooper. So, yeah, I think, and everybody else, as far as the bailiff, I think he's trying to use his natural voice. We've all tried to explore with those accents, but we want it to be real, authentic. And so if it's not working, we're just trying to use our natural tones. And like I said, the script is written so well, we don't really have to interject or over-exaggerate that. We just have to be true to the characters.
That's right.
So let's talk about opening night. How was opening night?
Great.
Opening night was awesome.
I mean, tell us about it. You know, the apprehensive. Was there any apprehensive when you look out there and see a full house or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting. It's thrilling. I mean, this thing that we do as actors out on that stage, it's the most thrilling thing, ever. So, I mean it was just great. Just finally all this hard work that we've done for the past 3 months just – like release it and just get it off our shoulders and have fun out there. I mean, it's a beautiful thing.
To play.
So we really enjoyed it. Yeah.
I thought because of the nature of my character, somebody was going to try to beat me up after the play. but they were everybody was so complimentary and it was just a lot of love. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
I think the most incredible thing that I noticed beyond this talented cast and working with Court as a director, which has been an amazing experience, and it's been just a character-building experience for me as an artist, and I thank God for that. I like the audience reaction.
Yeah.
Court brought his girlfriend with him, and she really enjoyed the show. She gave some very authentic feedback, and I think everybody who has seen this show and witnessed this show, because they've been twice our age, we're fairly young guys. You know, I know Cooper, who's a sheriff, he's a little bit older than we are as far as me and Court. But the older crowd really believes us. And I think that is a lot for young actors, directors who are putting up this project to receive that type of praise and recognition, because this is a story that is taken from reality. People have lived in slavery. The people that's come into this show have experienced some type of Jim Crow behavior treatment. And to their testimony, we've portrayed these characters very, very truthfully. Mm-hmm. And we're paying homage to our ancestors.
That's right.
And to America's history.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, how about surprises? Any surprises in the performances? Individual or as an ensemble as a whole?
Well, somehow.
music.
Somehow, Grant and I got into scuffing my cowboy hat. I wear a cowboy hat.
Oh, yeah. And his badge falls off sometimes.
Badge kept falling off first night. Every scene.
That's
maybe actually fall off on the floor.
Yeah, I'd get knocked off somehow because me and him scuffled a lot.
Yeah.
And how did you handle that?
The show must go on. We just kept,
My deputy picked it up and brought it back to me.
I think gone badge up, guys.
I think another surprise was, I don't know if you guys can hear, but I thank God that it's getting healed. My voice went out.
This weekend,
my voice was shattered. And I've been doing theater for over 10 years, and I'm a singer as well. I've never had a problem with my voice. Never. Mm-hmm. And I was just really kind of frantic about that because I just was hoping it wasn't some type of laryngitis or something weird, but the show starting on Friday, we opened the 7th, it was just really kind of raspy. Saturday night, I just was like raspier, and then Sunday, I thought I was going to lose it, but I got through the opening weekend because I'm a professional, and that's what you have to do in this business, regardless what happens to you health-wise. If you can make it, you can do it. You have to do it. I thank God that I have an amazing cast that supported me. I wasn't alone. And we had a great show. And the audience, they recognized that. They heard it because it was very obvious. My voice was very, very dry. It's a lot powerful, stronger now, but they respected the performance. And I thank God for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was a surprise.
Okay. Let's talk about your upcoming weekend. Can you tell us about the weekend coming up? And so what we want to do is, if we're going to mention this again in the community calendar, but can you just give us all of the basic information now that the audience would need? The dates, time, location.
Okay.
Get tickets.
All right, good, good, good. So, guys, this show is amazing. It is a part of American's history. America's history is a part of Black history. It is a part of the world's history. It is a story that is motivational and promising to bring change to the intellect, spirit, and mind of humanity. Guys, come check us out at the studio stage. We had an amazing opening weekend. We rocked on stage. Yeah. Everybody did a great job. The audience loved it. And that's why we're saying that, because the audience said it. Not because we're saying it. The audience said it. Come check us out. We're opening up again. We're running through the month of August until the 30th. We have a show the second weekend. The second run is going to be more powerful, starting Friday the 14th, Saturday the 15th, and Sunday the 16th at 8 p.m. That's at the studio stage. The address is 520 Northwestern Avenue, Los Angeles, California, zip code 9004. So you can MapQuest that, Google that if you need to find the address. And you can call Metro 411 if you're on public transportation. Don't let that stop you.
Come
we're performing A Lesson Before Dying. It is written by Ernest J. Gaines. It is produced by Russ. How do you pronounce his last name, Cooper?
Andrade.
Russ Andrade. It is directed by Court King, Shahid Chappelle. And I forgot to mention the co-producer,
Cooper Steve Anderson.
Come check us out, guys. We're running through the month of August, A Lesson Before Dying.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Come check us out, guys.
Now, what about the surprises among your other cast members?
Oh, I forgot to mention as far as tickets.
Tickets, yes. Ticket pricing.
You can purchase tickets on...
online.
Go ahead, Cooper.
At itsmyseat.com.
Yes. Check us out on our Facebook page, A Lesson Before Dying. You guys can get more information as far as ticket sales go there.
$15 and online, $20 at the door.
$15 online, $20 at the door, and it is worth it. If you guys want more information, you can call the box office at 323-581-4252. 323-581-4252.
We also have a Facebook page that you can go on and to just keep up with photos and stuff. It's A Lesson Before Dying Play. A Lesson Before Dying Play. So just search that in your Facebook and that'll pull up.
Come check us out,
Come
guys.
Come check us out, guys.
You will not be disappointed.
You will not be disappointed. This is one of the best shows to ever hit
it's
LA.
It's a story relevant to what's happening now to Black Americans,
Black
young
lives
Americans.
Matter. Hashtag Black Lives Matter.
Hashtag Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk a little about the background of each one of you. Can you talk, let's go back and talk about how you got off into theater, your interests, and how you developed to where you're at now. Can you talk about your beginnings in it?
Yeah. Well, I kind of pretty much started off in the theater. I kind of started off modeling at the beginning. I was kind of scouted. And then that led through an eventual discovery of acting and theater. And so after that, I went to theater school and... I just fell in love, man. I just caught the theater bug. I did, 10, 20 plus plays. I directed a play by Arthur Miller called Creation of the World and Other Business, which I also directed and starred in. I did a play by Ken Ludwig called Leading Ladies, which was a very, very great comedy. And so from that, I transitioned into independent films. And I'm originally from Atlanta, so... this is all taking place there, and I just pretty much got into the independent film market, TVs, commercials. And so I just moved to Los Angeles about a year ago to take my movie career to the next level. And you know, it's funny to be doing all this theater. I never really, I didn't really initially plan to come out here and do a lot of theater because, you know, Hollywood really isn't known for that. It's a film and TV-driven town. But just through the circumstances and God's will, I'm just doing all this theater, and you know I'm very happy to be doing a story like this. You know, it's so timely. It's you know they're killing us out there. You know, and it's sad. You know, a story like this should be told in every state right now. I feel like you know, So to just be a, to be able to have it in my hands and nurture it and grow it and then just show it to the city, I mean, it's a blessing.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Because that's one thing. If do you consider yourself actor, director? If they ask you, what are you?
First and foremost, I was put on this earth to act. Mm-hmm. You know, that's me. You know, I always consider myself an actor, performance artist. You know, but directing is just, it just comes easy to me. You know, I in a play like this, you know, I'm pretty much in every scene. So for me to direct it out and block it out, it was just very easy for me. So just something that came naturally to me. So I do see myself. And here's my rule: anything I direct, I got to put myself in it. You know, so. So that's the thing. So
Spike Lee.
That's what I was gonna say. Spike.
Absolutely. I don't know if I'll trust another lead actor with that role. You know, but it's a blessing to be doing this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I praise God.
Okay, and in a little while, I want to get back and discuss how could that impact the community, especially the young Black and Hispanic communities. Let's go over to Cooper. Tell us a little about your background.
Well, I have had probably 40 different jobs over my lifetime. I've tried just about everything. Longest thing, now I'm a director of marketing and a social networking manager. Wow. And so it's marketing and making sure the industry I'm in that people know about our factory, our business. I work for Russ Andrade, the producer, and we manufacture furniture, hotel furniture, mainly for upscale hotels and resorts, mm-hmm. and some private individuals. And I do all of the marketing and social networking. And I came out here actually in 1993 on a vacation. I'm from Kentucky. And I just fell in love with California. I said, heck, mm-hmm. I'm going to stay here.
L.A. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Got married and divorced.
Got married out here.
And divorced. And on a dare, I went to audition for a stage play, Street Scene. I remembered it this time. Street Scene. And it was just a light went on in my head and my heart.
And that's what happens.
I just had so much fun, and to be on stage, and had the power to make people laugh or cry, mm-hmm. that is just the most ego driving emotion that I ever had. And so I had to learn how to do this. And so I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. That's attended there for a few years, and so had a lot of private coaches for acting coaches, Cliff Osmond. In fact, he was my acting coach when, at the same time, he was Armando Sante's acting coach. And I worked with Danny Spear and Judy Bohannon and Madonna Young and so many other people. And I started doing theater around L.A., and then it started expanding. I did theater in Memphis, Tennessee, and San Antonio, Texas, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, all over the United States, and wound up back here because I wanted to be in the TV and film industry, and started getting little jobs here and there in the industry, and I'm still working on that. Mm-hmm. But I love theater, so it's something I have to do. I'm compelled.
Okay.
Shahid Chappelle.
Well, I kind of got my start in acting through, like I said, this guy. When I was in foster care, he overheard me singing and kind of pitched this idea of me going to this performing arts school. And at the time, I did not know about acting or art or anything like that. I was just a boy in a group home and trying to survive. He recognized the talent in me, and I didn't believe it. But he ended up forcing me to go sing and audition for the Lee Strasberg Theater Institute in West Hollywood, California. And I sang a couple gospel songs. The executive director of the program, she loved me, and they brought me in. And so I kind of grew up in Lee Strasberg Method Acting School, being trained there. And as a teenager, I got my first, manager there at the time. And from there, I just kind of fell in love with it. I kind of stumbled into it, or it found me in some weird way, and I'm like addicted to it. It's my love life, and it's everything that I need. It's my therapy. Acting is everything for me. Like I said, I have a strong background in theater from Lee Strasberg. I've attended many acting schools, Wendy Raquel Robinson, Amazing Grace Conservatory. I've worked with you guys, Drama Stage One, LACC Theater Academy, Actors Clubhouse. The list goes on and on. But I think fast-forwarding to A Lesson Before Dying, I'm so grateful to be playing Jefferson. Out of my years of acting, I've never had a role like this before. This guy is challenging me in every way because he's a real person and he's relevant to these times. And I thank God that I'm playing a character that I can make an impact and really bring hope to young Black people.
Let me ask you this, because, you just mentioned young Black people. You mentioned Black Lives Matters. Now, Lynn Manning, who we talked about doing a tribute for, he works at the Watts Village Theater. And you know, Watts, I think they were just celebrating the, not celebrating, but calling the attention to the riots, 1965 riots. And the demographics of Watts have totally changed. You know, Watts used to be one of your second known historic Black communities in the United States behind Harlem. But now Watts is about 70% Latinos, maybe 30% Blacks.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on a theater company? How can theater, you know, create a working relationship between the Latino community and the Black community in places like Watts?
Yeah.
Especially among the young people.
Right. And I'm from, like, Compton, California, you know, so I know Watts is not too far from Compton, but I definitely have noticed that throughout South Central, there's this kind of, I wouldn't say it's an epidemic, but it's drastically changed as far as the demographics. There's been a lot of Latinos dominating as far as the demographics goes in South Central. And I think it's a great thing because I think that ancestrally they're connected to African Americans tribally. So,
In what way?
As far as the tribes, the Aztecs, the African tribes, Zulu tribes, Indian tribes, the people of the land, people of the earth. So I don't see that as a negative thing that the demographics are changing. That's just probably due to the increase of population and birth in that community. But I think as far as the creativity, it definitely can bring humanity together as a whole. Art is, like, to me, a factor that kind of it's like a sowing seeds of hope, joy, and love in the community.
And, okay. And just to go on that, I think it's great for the arts in general because the more that our culture is infused with other cultures,
there you go.
It only make movies better. It only make plays better. It only make theater better. So it's like you have all these stories that can now be told. Mm-hmm. And now more people are going to want to listen.
Well, go ahead.
And so it's just, I was just going to say, just for casting in general, just for actors, there'll be more opportunities for Latinas and Blacks. I believe there's, for ethnic people generally, there's just an influx of opportunities for us. So I think it's great.
Well, let me ask this question. Because, you know, I hear all the time, you know, I think about it a lot, you know, the slogan that's becoming national, Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And I wonder why, because when you look at the Latino community, you look at what's happening with the immigration, you look at all the people, all the immigrants that lose their life trying to come over here. Yeah. You look at the gang banging that's happening in the Latino community. You look at the immigrant institutions that have become privatized. How do that correspond to Latina Lives Matters? I'm trying to get a hold on that in terms of why don't we hear that slogan?
I think that it is a struggle for I just think. You know, Latinas and Mexicans and any you know Latina group, but I just think that it just seems like a lot of you know cops are killing a lot of Black people nowadays. I mean, this is what it seems like in the media. So, I mean, if that's just what the media is pumping at us, then, I mean, I just feel like, and even that doesn't even scratch the cusp of really what's going on. For every two people they show you, there's probably 10 more. So, I mean, I just think that, I mean, I think it's a great cause. I mean, no, everybody's life matters, you know?
Yeah. So. And I think one reason is the fact that what's happening with blacks, it's all over the United States, East Coast, West Coast, right. South, Atlanta.
Exactly.
And then when you're dealing with Hispanics, you're dealing with areas like Los Angeles, Arizona, Texas, where you have a huge infusion of Latinas. But I think that's something for young people. It's going to have to look at all of that because I'm still, when I hear people question young black people about when they say Black Lives Matter, they say, well, how about Asians? How about whites? Right. How about Latinas? And I haven't heard any of them give anything that makes sense to me, even though I understand where they're coming from because there is a lot of that's coming down on little young blacks all over the country.
Yeah, but I think as far as Latinos go, we are, blacks and Latinos are considered the minority. And I think that that's definitely a demographic bundling of America as far as putting us in the same subgroup and same subculture. And so they share a lot of our injustices. It's not, like I said, we're connected. If you got to do the research, though, ancestrally through tribes and not through the American history, but through tribal history. And again, I want to echo with what Court said, you know, all lives do matter. Hashtag all lives do matter. But we cannot be ashamed to put the black man.
That's right.
And the abuse and the injustice that we've suffered for generations.
And it's real.
We cannot overlook that or commercialize it. And I think that I want to say that I'm very grateful to be directing with Court.
That's right.
A Lesson Before Dying, because it's a story specifically for our people, black people, African people, but it is a story for all people socially. Yeah. But I am grateful that I'm a black man directing a story about a young black boy who is treated unjustly, and I get to tell it in a positive light, in an inspirational light, along with another black director.
And did you want to say anything? You want to kick in on that?
What I think I have observed is Latinos tend not to be as vocal as blacks. They tend to want to keep their head down, stay under the radar, and just work and try to make a living.
Try to stay
out of the gun sights.
Okay. Now, let me also point this out because a great discussion. We're going to hit a community calendar in a minute. But the pack of what happened to theater in America. You know, in the 30s, we had a national theater company with the Federal Theater
Program. Tell me about it. Take me back.
And they felt that we had too many communists in it. You know, we had the so-called Hispanic theater, Negro theater. We had it all over, and the government subsidized it. Now, one of the problems that happened, you know, after Hoover and all of got rid of the national company, is you couldn't get the playwrights and the actors on the same page. They had this big argument. I'm going to play a clip after we come back from the community calendar that really put, this is where I think actors is in the shape they're in now. The argument is whether the theater should be a playwright's theater start off or an actor's theater. And they could never come together. They still haven't come together yet. So let's take a break for our community calendar, and we're going to come back. I want to touch a little on that.
All right. All right.
This is the community calendar of upcoming events. Saturday, August 30th, 2015, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., Industrial Green will be holding its first annual summer fundraising event. The location is Lot 613 on Imperial. This is a family-friendly event. There will be food, drinks, music, displays of current and future projects, and much, much more. For more information, please contact industrialgreen.org. And also, this is a Catherine McNinney project. You may also contact her for more information. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. And reminder, the call-in number for our show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, then. Thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. And we're back with our in-studio guest. And I would like to play a clip by Kim Sanders when I asked him about the possibility. We're talking about possibility of a national theater company and how the actors and playwrights should coexist with each other.
Well, at the core of the Black experience mm-hmm. is being able to think holistically. At the core of the African experience is the ability to think holistically. And even though Du Bois was saying at the starting point it was about the playwrights, he still had a holistic agenda. Mm-hmm. And actors wouldn't have been left out. He was trying to put together a structure so that we could develop a systemic way of sustaining the culture. Mm-hmm. When you are exposed, it's very seductive. Actors were on stage. They were very, it's very seductive when you're getting a lot of attention. And I would assume that that probably had something to do with the split. Mm. You know, this desire to be seen as opposed to the desire to maintain the integrity of the mission. Mm. And we still have to be mindful of that today mm-hmm. because there'll still be those systemic, seductive elements out there to try to split up agendas, split up missions. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have the discipline to recognize that, then we won't have any more success than they did. And we have to be, you know, mature enough to avoid infighting. Yes. Mm-hmm. We have to be mature enough to avoid infighting. It has nothing to do with us disrespecting your individualistic way of thinking, but if you want to collaborate, then there has to be some humility. There has to be some listening, teaching, silence, mm-hmm. educating, all happening at once. And what we tend to do is we get lost in what is first, as opposed to saying that's first in a particular perspective. But that's not discounting second, third, fourth, or fifth, because they're all pieces to the puzzle. I think along with grant writing, you're gonna need to like appeal to those who have economic power that are not a part of the government.
Yes.
Who look like us,
yes.
who don't look like us,
yes.
who are committed to humanity, mm-hmm. committed to children, committed to women's rights. Mm-hmm. And all of those people need to be addressed at the exact same time. And we need to be careful about pushing each other away, saying that their ideas don't matter. Mm-hmm. And we also need to like listen to the youth and ask them what are good ideas and how can those ideas be implemented? Because sometimes the older innkeepers don't want to sit down and let mm-hmm. the youth be energetic and use that vibrancy and creativity. Sometimes the youth don't want to sit down and listen and establish their powers and their creativity and their discipline. And so they go out there and it's easy for them to be figured out and they become a casualty. And all of that talent is wasted. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be a lot of internal work on every person to understand the importance of buying into a collective agenda because mm-hmm. that's who we are as a people.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Okay, I played that because I think what you have here is the foundation of something that's great. This performance that you got right now that could really take off, you know, and have a chance where you could really talk to a lot of these young people out here. Just what Kim talking about on how to work together and take it to the next level. Do you have any more scenes you want to perform? Did you have another one to perform? If not, I would like to get you.
I kind of want to kind of continue the discussion.
Okay, let's go.
That's
go
okay
ahead.
With the director, yeah. Court. You
yeah,
okay?
That's okay.
Yeah. What a powerful segment that I just heard, and I'm grateful to hear that because it taught me a lot as a youth, as an artist. I mentioned before Court and I had to be on one accord. The one accord was mentally, it was spiritually, and it was intellectually. It was looking at the script and the material and respecting Ernest J. Gaines and what he's written. Despite where we're at as far as our backgrounds, our age, because I'm a couple years older than Court, and he's from Atlanta, I'm from Los Angeles, so we come from different backgrounds. I grew up in foster care, very different backgrounds. He grew up in a family setting. But I say that to say, you have to put all that aside. There's a level of maturity that he spoke on that must take place between the artist, the director, and the playwright. And the maturity is not individualistic. It's understanding the message. Mm-hmm. It's understanding what do you want to say with your talent and what these words and your expression. And I think Court and I, we did a lot of research, as much as we could with the time that we had, to make sure that we were authentic and portraying these characters and this story. Mm-hmm. We definitely stylized the play with a little bit of our spaz and our experience and background as actors and artists, but the play is exactly what was written. It is true to the time period, 1948, and authentic to the tone of what was taking place.
And here's the most important thing. The rule that I believe in is that the show must go on.
Yes.
And you guys accomplished that. You know, no matter what problem you may have in rehearsal and all like that.
Yes,
that's right.
When the lights went on, you were there to perform.
Yes.
Now, we're winding down a couple of things because I got to do a poem for, this is a poem that I've never heard before. And I'm doing it for Lynn Manning because he was such a special person. And then we also got a section that we call the Lazarus Book Club, in which I try to give out some books, Lazarus, to wake the dead. You know,
that's right.
And this book is called Sex and Race, Volume 1, 2, 3, by J.A. Rogers. And it was a book that was banned for 40-some years. Still a hard copy to get. You know, people try to keep it off the shelf, but it's worth reading. You know, Sex and Race, Volume 1, 2, 3 by J.A. Rogers. Now, I'm going to read this poem. It's a poem I'm going to do for Lynn Manning, and it is entitled The Meme Factor and the Three Stages in the Development of the Human Spirit in the Physical Material World. Long title. There are three stages in the development of the human spirit here in the physical material world. And these three stages are identified by the esoteric letter MEME, or M, where M stands for the Melchizedekian system of high priest kingship. Now, there are 720 degrees of knowledge in the name Melchizedek, 360 degrees of circle, symbolic of the physical material world. 360 degrees of circle, symbolic of the spiritual world. Now consider how great this Melchizedek is, that Abraham, the father of nation, the priest of Kim, gave tithes. Now there are three stages in the development of the human spirit here in the physical material world. And these three stages are to draw out, picked out, and stand out, sometimes called Moses, Messiah, and Muhammad, all within the orbit of the meme factor. Now, the first stage of Moses to draw out is to draw out that unique God-given talent that each one of us has. The second stage, Messiah, picked out, is to be picked out by the community to serve the community with that talent. And the third stage, Muhammad, is to be praised for standing out and serving your community. Now, the meme factor is Metatron. The meme factor is Moses. The meme factor is Messiah. The meme factor is Muhammad. The meme factor is Marcus. The meme factor is Martin. The meme factor is Malcolm. The meme factor is Lynn Manning. The meme factor is Melchizedek. Thank you. That's for Lynn Manning.
Interesting.
Great loss.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Rest in peace.
Amazing. Amazing.
Okay, so we're winding down. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. I'd like to reach out. Excellent discussion with our guests and my co-host. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with Dr. Martin Luther King talking about righteousness.
Somebody make you think that God chose America as his divine messianic force to be a sort of policeman of the whole world. God has a way of standing before the nations with judgment, and it seems that I can hear God saying to America, you're too arrogant. If you don't change your ways, I will rise up and break the backbone of your power, and I'll place it in the hands of a nation that doesn't even know my name. Be still and know that I'm God. The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home. Though the civil rights leaders, for various reasons, refuse or can't take a stand or have to go along with the administration, that's their business. But I'm afraid that I know that justice is indivisible. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.